Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. This week, we are wrapping up our three-part series covering the Walter Simonson Fantastic Four run. We are looking at Volume 3 of the trades. We are looking at issues 347 to 349. That's the Monsters Unleashed story. And then we are looking at issues 350, 352, 353, and 354. That's the Cross Time Express story. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Matt, how you doing this evening?
Doing great, Bob. This Fantastic Four book is insane. This is insane. If you want something that's cracked out, just pick up Walter Simonson Volume 3 here. This is crazy.
One of the greatest writers and artists of the 80s just leans into the madness of the 90s.
If they can translate this to film, I would be amazed. Like, I don't think other people would like it, but I would.
Is the Monsters Unleashed adaptation your dream for Fantastic Four 3 in the MCU?
That would be awesome. I would love that. I'd also love a video game version of this whole run. I know that sounds really cheesy and cliche, but I would love to play as all the different characters. And there's so many different settings you could use in this series.
Now that you say that, it makes perfect sense because there is a very level quality and the real video game quality. Well, Matt, for the 347, 348, 349, the Monsters Unleashed or the new Fantastic Four story, the art is not by Walt Simonson. It's by Art Adams.
Okay.
You know Art Adams' art?
I don't know.
He didn't draw a lot of Marvel stuff, but he was very famous for what he did draw in the 80s. He did several X-Men annuals, including big ones where they visit Asgard and Mojo World. And so he's a real fan favorite artist.
Yeah, he's very, the emotions in their faces on the image, it's very specific and concrete. If you look at it, you can see a lot of the lines and stuff in their faces. It's different than what we're used to seeing in these comics, especially when you get to the scrolls.
It's an interesting merger point between the more cartoony style of the 1980s and the more detailed style of the transition artist.
There's a lot of cartoony stuff there too, to just add. Anytime you involve the scrolls doing something, there's always something over the top a little bit.
That's a good point. So what's the summary for Monsters Unleashed, aka the new Fantastic Four?
Well, Bob, a Skrull renegade invades the Fantastic Four, so a new Fantastic Four is formed consisting of Ghost Rider, Hulk, Spider-Man, and Wolverine.
Indeed, Matt, indeed. And did you like the scenes of all the members of the Fantastic Five getting seduced by a Skrull in the lead-up to needing to form this new Fantastic Four?
It is an absolute joy watching each one of them be seduced in a different way, in a different creative way. My favorite is Sue, though, with Namor. That dude shows up all the time. I don't know how they're going to do it in the MCU, but they have got to get this dynamic in there somehow. That's a key dynamic for Sue.
And it's a very hard dynamic to get right. And in a lot of the older comics, that's a little bit of a weird dynamic.
It is. And I want them to figure out how to do it the right way.
That is a really interesting challenge for the MCU. And then all of this revolves around Monster Isle. So, Matt, it's the early 90s. You're a young kid. You're excited that there's a new Fantastic Four to replace the stodgy old Fantastic Four. Of the new Fantastic Four, who's your favorite? Who's your least favorite?
Okay. I like Spider-Man being on the Fantastic Four because of the whole... Remember when he went and had the Amazing Bagman? He could be a member because he had the costume. He looked the part. He's got the quips, which Johnny and Thing have the whole back and forth. So I like Spidey being on the team.
And as we saw in the Hickman run, he makes a natural replacement.
Right. Now, this is controversial, Bob, but I disagree with Wolverine. I don't see him. He's got X-Men DNA. Being on a different team, I always thought he was weird on the Avengers, too.
On a long enough timeline, Wolverine will be a part of every team. Man.
Yeah. Now, I will say that, you know, I like Hulk. I like Incredible Hulk. Here, he's gray.
I would have to somewhat agree with you that Spider-Man is my favorite of these four and Grey Hulk my least favorite.
Well, I don't really have a problem with Grey Hulk. Ghost Rider is the wild card, but he's cool. He's got the fire element, so he's necessary.
I did think it was kind of funny. We were just talking about Spidey being a good replacement for the Torch, but I was thinking about it, and if you map it out, if you wanted to say it in the new Fantastic Four, who's replacing the old Fantastic Four, you'd have to say Spidey's replacing Reed as sort of reluctant leader and genius. And then obviously Grey Hulk is replacing Ben as the muscle. And obviously Ghost Rider is replacing Johnny as the flame. And so that just leaves you with Wolverine replacing Sue.
That's why I don't think Wolverine fits with this
Actually,
team.
You can make it fit, though, because they're both the stealth specialists.
The advantage here, though, too, is Hulk's really smart as well. So he could also be your Reed, right?
He could be your Reed. Yeah. He could be your Reed. And Spider-Man is very strong. So, yeah, you could somewhat switch that if you needed to. Well, Matt, even though I'm disrespecting Grey Hulk, and I will continue to, he actually is involved in my favorite panels of this story arc, which are in the trade on page 57 and 58. You see Grey Hulk sweating as he holds up all the rocks that the new Fantastic Four is trapped under, and he's also sweating because Ghost Rider is swinging his Hellfire chain to drill a hole out, which is so stupid, but also it's so stupid, it's brilliant.
Oh, it's brilliant. He does this move in the video game.
Which video game is that?
Midnight Suns.
I thought that was more like an RPG than like a combat game.
Oh, it is, but I mean, they all have moves. If you would play it, you would love it. I don't know what you're missing. Like, those video games are not what they used to be.
I'm not going to spend $500 to play a video game.
Bob, come on.
I just spent $60 on a Jonah Hex comic.
Yeah.
I got to prioritize for a
See
moment.
what you're saying, Bob. You don't have time to swing your chains around like Ghost Rider.
I also just sent the federal government $3,000 to clear out a loan, a student
Holy.
loan.
That could have been
I
spent on playing as Ghost Rider, Bob. What's wrong with you?
I could have got six systems to play as Ghost Rider for
You
that amount of
could
money
have
or
played
whatever.
Ghost Rider on PS5, Xbox, Nintendo Switch. You could have them all.
Oh man, grim stuff. I do also want to say about this, Matt, that I think it's pretty brilliant that on the one hand, obviously this is a gimmick crossover with the new Fantastic Four.
Is it Bob?
But then underneath it, there's another gimmick crossover that it's also getting all these 50s Marvel monsters together for a crossover. And so the layer of the 90s gimmick crossover and then the 50s Marvel monster crossover under it is pretty fun, I think.
And we hope as you're listening to this, you understand how crazy this sounds. This is just the first part of this series. Like this, it's already insane.
Speaking of insane, Matt, what's your favorite panel from the new Fantastic Four art?
Well, Bob, my favorite panel is on page 73. And it's hilarious because Reed Richards kisses the fake Sue Storm and then punches her in the face with his extending arm.
Oh, he did. He's just luring her into a false.
But he kissed her, Bob.
His turnabout is fair play.
I
It
get it.
is a bit unseemly of his
Yeah.
relative enthusiasm for punching this woman disguised as his wife.
Yes.
That also fits in with the zany tone.
Immediately goes and kisses his actual.
Well, Matt, anything else you want to cover before I take us to the end and the gag at the end of this arc?
Not really, Bob, although I am glad to see the Mole Man. I have more respect for the Mole Man now. They really. Did you ever watch The Incredibles?
I never did.
Okay.
It just didn't seem the type of thing for me, and then I heard it was Ayn Rand propaganda.
It's literally the Fantastic Four.
It's Ayn Rand propaganda.
The end of the film, though, has a character called the Underdweller, Underdigger, or something. It's the Mole Man.
I didn't know they'd gone so far as to have a mole man.
They make fun of the Mole Man at that point. This brings him back. This makes him cool.
This does well with him, and then he was done okay in the Hickman run.
Oh,
I
yeah.
thought I liked him as like a monarch, as a weird monarch. I mean, he wasn't a big focus of Hickman, but I liked him.
What happens at the end of this issue that you find hilarious?
We have the Punisher showing up, flying in on a helicopter, right? And then he surveys this and he's, oh, the Fantastic Four and Ghost Rider and the Hulk and Spider-Man are here. Me flies out. Presumably he heads to Riverdale for the comic he's just covered.
I like that continuity. I really do.
Indeed.
He's searching for
right after
freckles.
he's searching for Red Fever. He's gonna find Red
No.
Fever. And as we establish, right after he goes to Riverdale, he goes to Gotham City.
Bob, so the final comic in this particular short, the Monster Men piece, the Monsters Unleashed piece, on the cover, they advertise that the Punisher will appear in the issue,
They do. They
which
set the
is,
gag up. They set the gag up.
He's on one panel.
Don't they call it the most unnecessary appearance of the year?
Featuring the world's most exploitative cameo.
The world's most exploitative cameo, which you may remember, that is a real funny thing that Simonson is very good with the captions in this run. He's very good with the cover blurbs. He's very good with the teases for the next issue.
All right, Bob. So if we move a little bit forward to the next section.
We're going to talk about the four-part story that's Cross Time Express. That's the title of one of the issues, but it seems to me to make sense to use to describe all four. What goes down in the Cross Time Express, Matt?
Dr. Doom returns and he wreaks havoc on the timeline, causing the TVA to intervene.
My favorite panel comes really early. It's on 78, and we see a bunch of Doom bots attacking Kristoff because one of the Doom bots thinks he's really Doom, and they're blasting through Castle Doom's walls, and they're blasting through the Latverian palace security. It's a really sick image. I liked it a lot.
This Doom does show up in a brand new looking costume that's cool looking. It's all silver metal.
You do like it. I was going to ask if you, because it is a very early 90s. I don't think they say adamantium, but it's a very adamantium Doom.
He looks like a knight, like in armor. But the only thing I don't like is that belt. That belt buckle is just, ugh. What is that even holding up? The pants? What does he need a belt for?
It's not holding up its pants, Matt. It's holding your eye.
It draws my attention to his body. His massive metal silvery body, yes.
You see, Dr. Doom has been listening to some YouTube influencer.
He needs a point of focus in his belt buckle.
Also,
he should have had Doom written on it.
Notice how high up his torso is.
Oh, yeah.
I would say almost like halfway up his torso. It's nowhere near his waist.
It's at his rib cage.
It's almost more like, at this point, it's more like a corsage than a belt.
I think Bob means a corset.
Corset, thank you. Corsage is a flower, right?
That's correct.
Matt, have you ever seen the series Doom 2099?
I have not, but I almost downloaded it the other day because I want to read a little more Fantastic Four. Let's see what I can find. And that was one that popped up.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I'm not actually going to watch those Avengers Doom movies, but when one of the Avengers Doom movies is coming out, maybe we should cover Doom 2099. It's a pretty good series. The Doom 2099 design, not exactly the same as Simonson's design for Doom here, but there is some similarity, especially with like the high silver and the more knightly chainmail look. Even though Dr. Doom always has armor, it's especially like with the legs, it's more knightly chainmail. There's definitely some influence from this, from Simonson's Doom here on the 2099 design.
So after we're reintroduced to Doom Bob in the next issue, there's a lot going on between the Thing and She-Thing. She-Thing doesn't want to be She-Thing anymore.
And so as she cuts a deal with Dr. Doom?
She does. She cuts a deal with Dr. Doom, and it's not a great idea. And at the same time, Ben Grimm really doesn't know how to handle any of this. He goes around in his Thing suit, thinking she'll feel better if he's also dressed up like a Thing. It reminds me of the Harvey Dent Two-Face stuff. It just blows my mind. This is how he gets it back, as he just goes in a machine. I wanted more.
On the She-Thing bit, granted, you could have looked up and I could have looked up a picture of Sharon Ventura as Miss Marvel before this, but did you like on page 92 where we actually get to see a painting of Sharon Ventura as Mrs. Marvel before she was She-Thing? Very Phoenix, but also very much like the Carol Danvers.
Yeah, oh yeah, Marvel. Definitely.
Yeah, with Miss Marvel costume with the color swap. And then also, can we just take a minute to admire Doom's smoking jacket riz on that same page? He looks so good. But...
a Hugh Hefner thing is what they were going for.
Do you have strong opinions, strong negative opinions to Doom's snake bots that we see on 105?
Anytime Doom introduces some robot variation, I'm okay with it. Because, I mean, Doom bots get boring after a while. Same Doom bots. These look like Tri-Sentinels, though.
The Wild Sentinel, Tri-Sentinel.
They do.
Not fully, but yeah, there's a strong... It's almost... I wonder if they did a thing where Dr. Octopus got jealous because the tentacles look very much like... Otto's arms.
Oh, yeah.
You could do a nice little rivalry story there.
Yeah, these Doombots seem they're more versatile, too. I think they're doing crazy gymnastics to grab Sue. Regular Doombots can't do that.
Another random page I wanted to draw to your attention, Matt, was 93. We see Franklin getting examined by his dad, laying out on his dad's lab slab. And Franklin has a stuffed dinosaur with him. Matt, do you think he would be so comfortable around his dad and his mom and his family if he knew how many dinosaurs they murdered the prior story arc?
Oh, no, they would never tell him about that. Once Franklin gets his powers and he basically becomes God later on, he finds out about that story.
Oh, man, there's an evil God Franklin coming for revenge on his family for what they did.
Remember when Uncle Ben ripped a raptor's tail off with his bare rock hands? Remember when your dad... took an AK-47 to a T-Rex's face. Reed's awful with these dinosaurs. I hope he never learns.
And the whole family.
Yeah, they're awful. They're dinosaur murderers.
Did you actually do the trick of reading the comic twice, the issue 352, the second part of this Crosstime Caper four-parter?
No.
Yeah, because if you do, you see how throughout it, Reed and Doom are fighting.
Oh, and you did the time. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, if you actually do read it in order of the timestamps, you can see the Reed and Doom fight is like a cohesive story.
Okay, all I did, Bob, was play this out in my head like a movie. And I just was, okay, Doom, and they're just clocking each other back in time. They're just trying to position each other using the time different. I've seen this somewhere else. I don't know where. I almost want to say it was in Hickman's run, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think people have referenced it several times. I think this
okay.
is I don't know if there was something else Simonson was drawing from, but when I see people talk about this story, they usually credit it pretty original.
Yeah, it's really cool. This is when it just gets crazy. Reed and Doom are fighting within milliseconds of each other and using that to position themselves in ways that go to their advantage based on milliseconds.
That's a really good description of it.
It's very intense. I was not going to go back and reread it all though in order, so I just can't do that.
One, and that's one of the crazy things about this run is, I mean, it seems to basically alternate off, right? There's a wacky run, and then there's a time travel run, then there's a wacky run, and then there's a time travel run. And it's really crazy, though, how many different types of time travel stories he tells with this, because there's the big exploration story in the first trade, and then you have the alternate history story in the second trade, then you have the primeval history story in the second trade, and now in this third one, you have this super experimental stuff with both the Doom and the Reed fight, and with the stuff I think that really amused you of getting involved directly with the TVA in the last two issues.
All this meddling with time has caused the TVA to take notice of this particular timeline, and they intervene. Which, to me, that's what they did in the Loki series. And had they waited for the Fantastic Four, it would have been so much better. The locations you see in this comic are on that show.
Oh,
The
wow.
only real difference, the one thing I do want to point out, and there's a part where they're showing the TVA. There's a scene where they're showing where they basically dump or get rid of all of the things that don't fit in a timeline, and it looks like a trash compactor. That's a huge part of the Loki series because that's where Loki ends up, and he meets all the other Lokis from other timelines. And on that page, though, I don't know if you caught it. Was that Supergirl?
I didn't catch it. What page?
It's on page 7 of the trade.
Oh yeah, you're right. Falling amidst the multiple Earths. Yeah, that's definitely Supergirl.
Is that like a Crisis reference or something?
It's totally a Crisis reference because of the multiple Earths.
That's crazy to me. But see, what happens is that in the show, they end up on some abandoned world after they fall through this. And you've ever seen the Langoliers, Stephen King's thing?
I have. It's terrible.
They literally steal the Langolier plot. The whole thing. It's literally, Stephen King could totally sue them if he wanted. But the Langolier, that's what Loki's having to fight with his other Lokis. See, that's what they came up with. Now, that's Fantastic Four story is badass. This is how the TVA should be done. They just trash the whole TVA. Ben does a cannonball through the infinite TVA people. Johnny just flies around burning up stuff. No regard. Johnny literally destroys universes, Bob, and just nonchalantly says, "We got plenty of them." That is like literally what he says at one point. Did you catch that?
It's really bringing that like 90s action logic to this, right? There's also something, there's a really interesting parallel of the opening arc to the Walt Simonson run is the Fantastic Four versus Congress, right? It's funny to have the final arc culminate in the Fantastic Four versus the TVA. And so it's now they're just fighting bureaucracy and government on
That's all they
a
fight.
multi-universal level, right?
The last cover, 354, when I saw that time train, I got so excited. That's straight out of Back to the Future. Back to the Future 3, May 1990.
Okay.
Time train.
Clearly a Back to the Future 3 reference, but there's also a way in which it's an interesting escalation of the time sled from the first trade, right? Silly but awesome gag of the movement in space, movement in time.
It's almost like an escalation from a DeLorean.
It's a cross time
Well,
expression, if you will.
Bob, I do want to point out how this ends because it is rather ridiculous, and this is where I almost wanted to put a little bit of a negative on this, but then I just laughed. Then
You
I
don't
just
like
laughed.
Fantastic Four stripping down to their skivvies?
In exchange for getting a ride on this train, the conductor of the train wants their uniforms so that he can make a conductor suit out of them. This means that he needs all their outfits. And if you ever wondered, all the Fantastic Four wear matching underwear.
Indeed, indeed. They all wear the white briefs.
Yeah. And then there's an image where they're all laying down when they finally make it back and they're still in the bubble. It looks like the cover of some like 1970s yacht rock album.
Very strange. Well, this has been a very, very weird climax to a very weird run. I'm glad we went with it. I did want to say, before we talk about ranking the whole Walt Simonson run on our list of comics, would you agree with this ranking of the arcs? I think I would rank them, and it sounds like you might disagree with this, but I would rank them Monsters Unleashed, aka New Fantastic Four number one, Into the Time Stream, which is the time travel arc from our first episode, number two, this time travel arc, Cross Time Express, number three, the dinosaur arc from last episode, the Mesozoic Mambo, number four, the Fantastic Four versus Congress and versus Jobbers, the Acts of Vengeance tie-in, number five, and then the Nuke Busters, the Fantastic Four versus Stalin and Daniels. I would rank that last. Does that seem like reasonable to you?
I was going
to
put Nuke Busters last too, and I was like, that redeeming factor of the mech, that
is a good mech.
Without that mech, it would not have been as good.
I do like Nuke Busters. I'm putting it last.
Yeah, it is good.
But I don't think it's terrible.
Right. I like the time travel stuff more, so I probably would have put them in the front and then Monsters Unleashed.
Do you like this Cross Time Express arc with the wacky train and the wacky Doom and Reed fight? Do you prefer this to the End of the Time Stream stuff from the first episode?
No, I like the End of the Time Stream stuff better just because it was... As crazy as it was, I could follow along everything with like how they traveled through time. It's complex, but it also fit in with Galactus, which I liked.
There are good visuals in the Cross Time Express too, but I feel like the visuals in Into the Time Stream are just top.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
The way Simonson's representing entropy and stuff like that, it's really cool.
The only thing I would give Cross Time Express, if I would push it further, that would be the fight between Reed and Dr. Doom. They could do that on a movie and it would be so damn cool.
My slight disagreement with you would be you have to get people familiar with the Fantastic Four before you can really do Franklin as God stories, or before you can do Franklin from the future, or before you can do this type of time travel stories in a movie. And so I don't begrudge them doing it with Loki, although I haven't actually seen the Loki show. But sometimes you just got to end on a fizzle. to your white briefs.
True.
Okay, Matt. So we have a 17-item list of comics we've looked at for this podcast. At the top, John Hickman, Fantastic Four run. At the bottom, AJ Lieberman, Gotham Knights run. And then, interestingly, our top four right now, three of them are Fantastic Four. We've got John Hickman, Fantastic Four, number one. We've got Sanford Green and John Hickman, Dr. Doom, at number two. We've got Mark Waid, Michael Ringo, Fantastic Four at number three. And then we've got Junie Ba's Boy Wonder series at four. Do you want to crack this into the top four, or do you think it's a little below that?
Man, it's definitely top five.
There is a focus, and I've said this about other things too, right? Single stories at number four, we got Boy Wonder. And at number six, we have Batman City of Madness, both of which we really like. And those are only four issues or so, three issues, four issues. And they have a real tight focus that these long runs that Simonson or Waid or Deeney on Detective Comics, they get to do a lot more stuff, but they can't do as much stuff as well always in the focus story.
I would put it as the new number five, maybe. I think okay. Boy Wonder's better.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, as much as I like Simonson. So that would put Boy Wonder at four, Junie Ba's Boy Wonder, Walt Simonson, Art Adams et al.'s Fantastic Four at number five, and then that would put the two Archie versus Predator series by Alex DeCampi, that would put them down to six. Does that sound right?
That sounds good, yeah. I like that.
All right. Well, I will fill that in. Well, listeners, thank you for going on this Fantastic Four journey with us. We are not quite done. We are going to try and do a couple more Fantastic Four comics before the movie comes out. A couple more. We still got to cover the Future Foundation series. So we're going to cover Matt Fraction and Jeremy Whitley's Future Foundation series. And stay tuned for Uncanny Treks as more keeps on rolling. And if you really like zany hijinks and science fiction, crazy storytelling, well, listeners, Strange New World Season 3 coming in just a couple weeks. We're both excited.
Oh, I'm hyped about that. All right.
We are hyped.
Thanks for listening.